McKenzie, and with me back in the Philippines is Josh Cacho. Josh, insert Filipino greeting here. I don't know any Tagalog.
Put me on the spot here, man. But mabuhay, you know, to everyone out there. You know, thank you for everyone for joining. Like I said, it's good to be back home after visiting the other home for about 5 weeks. Yeah. So, it was obviously really nice because we were able to catch a match while we were out there, which was great. I mean, the result wasn't so great, but, you know, we were there at the stadium. So, that's always a good thing, getting to take my kid there. But beyond that, like I said, it's been interesting couple weeks. Apologies for that we weren't able to record before then. I was traveling and enjoying as much good food in Hawaii before we headed back to the Philippines as I could. So tried to hit all the places that I know would make Kirk jealous before heading back to the Philippines. So here we are.
Does that mean you ate some Portuguese fried rice?
Oh, for sure. Every morning.
Which is, without a doubt, the goat of all breakfasts. I don't care what anybody says. Portuguese fried rice is the best breakfast on the planet. Fight me, everybody.
I mean, I've always said, and again, this is coming from a Filipino who has now lives in the Philippines, right? But the greatest collection of Asian foods is only to be found in Hawaii.
It's so good. Right? When you
think about all the blends of cultures and characters, again, not always through the greatest of means, right? It's usually through the overthrowing of a monarchy and some other things that happened as well.
Yeah.
But you've ended up with an amazing, amazing collection of the greatest of Asian cuisines. So anytime that you want to eat Filipino food, you know, chicken adobo with Korean short rib, I mean, it's the only place to go.
Yeah. So my wife and I were there in December for our 15th wedding anniversary. And all I could think about was like, I finally feel like I'm at home again, right? Where, when I'm at home, when I'm like visiting my parents in LA at this point, I don't feel like I'm at home. But, when I'm there back on specifically Oahu, I feel like I'm back at home, which is interesting because I only lived there, you know, about 3.5 years, but that's the only place that feels like home. And all I could think about was like, all right, I just need to move back. I need to find a new job out here and move back for many reasons. But
Hawaii is a budding football culture. You know, I mean, I know it's home to some of the greatest collection of Polynesian American football players, but I do think it's ripe for the picking for some soccer as well.
The sport is growing out there, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, obviously the other part of it too is, right, is the reason why it feels like home is that everyone is family, right? Whether you're a Haole or a tourist, like there, I mean, again, the goal is to try and, you know, the goal culturally, right, amongst everyone there is to actually, you know, everyone is family until you prove that you're not.
Yeah. Until you're one of the Marines that I have to go pick up from the drunk tank and Honolulu. Yeah.
I mean,
then you're not welcome anymore.
I'm always ready to scrap. So, I mean, they're welcome to a certain degree.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was 3.5 minutes of preamble, Josh. So we got to get going here. This is uncharacteristic for us. We are here to recap specifically the Portland match. We'll talk a little bit about El Tráfico since we missed that match as well. 2-2 draw against Portland. Kind of a frustrating game in a lot of ways. Great performance from Matty Bogusz, but you're happy with the road point, but feels like they left some on the table, huh?
Yeah, I mean, again, anytime that we're on the road, right, at least against, again, in certain locations, right, Portland being one of them, right, anytime you're on the road on turf, you're always happy to get a point. And had you told me we were guaranteed that before the match, I probably would have been okay with it. However, it's one of those draws that feels like a loss just because of the way things went down and the opportunities that were there that it felt, you know, that to a certain degree, it felt like we fell short more than anything else.
Yeah. Being up a man for 40 minutes and generating as little as they did in those 40 minutes is really frustrating. Granted, anytime a team goes down to 10 men, especially a team like Portland, even though Gio Savarese is not there anymore, they're going to pack it in. It's going to be harder to score. But, man, I am really tired of the way that this team subs. I'm really tired of the way that they don't know how to attack the goal from, like, an attacking phase of the game. Everything, if it's not in transition, they're useless in the attack. And it's just, man, it's frustrating. And you see flashes of possibility there, right? The goal, so Bogusch's first goal from open play is actually really good. It's him coming up from the midfield, not playing, like, he's not occupying the center backs. He's making a run through from the midfield, and Tillman plays a great ball to him. And it's a great finish from him. I feel like that he's settling into a better spot there at that striker position, even though ultimately it's not what we want. And so you kind of see something that works from open play, right? It's still kind of a transition-ish moment, but man, just watching them struggle with that low block where it's just a midfield leaves the block, a midfielder comes out of the block, gets on the ball, doesn't drive forward, doesn't take anybody on, and just keeps moving it around and around and around. There's a certain amount of probing that you have to do to open up a team, but at some point you need penetration as well, and they just can't do it. They cannot do it. Midfielders are not open inside that block, and they won't dribble at guys to try and draw them out. It just continues to be a very stagnant attack, in all honesty.
I mean, I think we get what we asked for, right? In terms of when you look at the roster construction, in terms of what do we expect when we have non-attackers playing attacking positions, right? And when I say non-attackers, like, you know, Bogusch has proved that he can attack, right? And is maybe an attacking midfielder, right? But is that his best position, right? Same thing with Tillman. He can attack. Is he a true 10? No, right? Both of them are probably are at their best position is probably half space merchants, right? And when you look at the other two midfielders that you have in Atuesta and Ilie, neither of them are attackers in the purest sense of the word, if you will, right? So then we get to this you know point now where I think when you look across the board, we have these, you have an attack that looks stagnant because let's put it this way. When you're a skilled technician in any particular field, you can go to different things, right? Once your first or second or third or fourth idea runs out, right? Like for me as a physical therapist, if my first assessment of the patient and then treatment doesn't go accordingly, we can move on to the next thing. We can try different things. You know when to adapt and when to change. I think what's happening here is that we're asking guys that don't have that particular specialty. And once that bag has been emptied, right, which is usually one or two things, because that's their bag, right? Their bag is as midfielders goes 1 through 4, and then their attacking things are 5 and 6. Well, you're now asking them to move 5 and 6 to the top of the list. And I think that's now where you run into problems, because once that's not available to them, it's just not in the skill set to be able to pull something out. And I don't necessarily think that's fair to them.
Yeah. So there's like this famous, a lot of coaches are happy to give guys the reins in the final third, right? So we've talked about this before, but Pep will tell you that the first two thirds of the game are his and the final third is yours. You go create, right? Now, he's typically dealing with much better attackers than we are, but I like this idea of our attackers being limited, right? We know Kike Oliveira is a little more than a fast winger, right? He doesn't finish well. He doesn't play make at all, really. He's fast. He's fast. And he enables a bit of creativity because of apparently the way that he presses and turns over the ball high up the field. So you can catch teams disorganized. But is Denny Bawanga all that different? Like, he has to score on the counter. And if LAFC catch you on the counter, he is lethal. He's absolutely lethal, right? Like, best in the league type of counterattacker. But who else is around there to help you with anything? What other profile of attacker do you have that you can rely on, right? Carlos isn't there anymore. So you don't have that. You don't have a guy that can actually just break down defenders, right?
And then and so to add on top of that, right? We've often talked about Steve kind of falling into that Brian Schmetzer category of coaches where, again, they're not going to wow you with their technical prowess, if you will, right? They're going to be guys that are going to put guys in a position and they're not going to get in their way of their success, right? Which sometimes with the overly technical guys, you may see that happen. However, I think when you look at what's happening with this team, right, it's like it's one thing to do that like a Zidane when you're dealing with a Real Madrid team that is loaded to the gills, that has all the skill in the world, that can, you know, that really just needs you to get out of the way and then they can do their thing. Now compare that to a salary capped team whose technical prowess is going to be limited. And I think if you pair it with a coach like Cherundolo, where this team currently in its current construction doesn't have the ammo at his disposal, right? That he did when they won the cup, and you had Gareth Bale and you had Chiellini and you had, you know, whatever Christian Teo was supposed to be, and you had Buonga, and you had Chicho, and you had Carlos Vela. So it's one of those things where it's like, again, that cup winning team may not have been Real Madrid, right, in terms of what it could do, but it was certainly much more loaded than our current team is. And if we're not going to get the level, you know, like I said, I think Trenlo has to do a lot more to protect this team than he did 2 years ago. Let's put it that way, right? And I think that it affects Buonga in that same way, in the, where now Buonga is having to do so much more of the heavy lifting, so much more falls on him, and that skill set just may not be there. And maybe he's increasingly, you know, like, and maybe he just needs a little bit of Carlos Vela just to draw defenders, and that's all he needed. But imagine how much more effective he is if you add Chicho, if you add some of these guys that, you know, were there and have since moved on. And so that's why it's tough, because again, it's hard to really get a bearing on. I mean, I think you and I, as being skeptics of the league and its policies, and that's putting it nicely, right? I think we've always kind of known in the back of our minds that it's like, if the players were as good as we would love to think they are, they wouldn't be at LAFC, right? They're in Europe somewhere. And unfortunately, most of the guys that we thought were that probably aren't quite that yet, right? And they have shown some of their flaws and some of their limitations. And I think, again, MLS is, to a certain degree, trying to put the best sum of your parts together rather than really having a ton of skill and talent to be able to overcome said sum of parts.
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of problems. And I think that's what you're getting at here, is that Steve is going to be limited with what he can do, right? And I mean, a couple different things that I want to point out. You mentioned, you know, if you have a Chicho there, maybe it helps. And like, so Kai Kamara is great. He's effective in MLS, but he's not a great fit for what they're trying to do. I think they need to change what they're trying to do to make guys like Kai Kamara, and Olivier Giroud fit better. Like when he comes in, he's ineffective too, because he can't even get on the ball, right? When you see a long ball lumped to him, which is kind of his specialty, right? Big target striker, can drop in and give you a bit of hold up and then get back in the box for crosses or whatever. They're not doing any of that with him. There is no, like, if a ball is played to him, there's no third man running off of him to try and receive that ball on the run, right? They're just watching him. Like, oh, let's see what Kai does, right? The way that they do it with Denny, right? Or even Kike to a certain extent. But it's like, if you're doing that with Kike Oliveira, like, you're never going to score a goal. We have a new kitten, and he is really mad right now. So that's why you're hearing what you're hearing. I think the back line is still in shambles. The first goal that they score is just a complete howler by everybody involved. Where Vander just kind of lofts his ball towards Mora. Murillo isn't tracking Mora at all. I tweeted out a screenshot of the back line, and it's a complete diagonal. It's all broken. Aaron Long is nowhere to be found, which leaves Murillo isolated. Palencia is holding everybody on side. Lloris doesn't really know what to do with the ball because it's kind of flicked on by Mora at the end. And it's like, it's just in shambles. It's just awful. And it's like, well, who else are you going to bring in on that back line? You have literally nobody to come. Like, Segura, again, shell of himself, right? Chanot is just getting into the team. Omar Campos isn't ready for prime time. So it's like you're saying, there's so many restrictions. Sure, but like, you have to change your approach. One of the other things that I wanted to bring up was the fact that the subs are... I am really tired of the striker sub to move Bogusz back into the midfield and have Ilya come off the field. Like, Ilya's got to be on the field more. Or you have to sit him and just let Atuesta and the midfield do its thing from the beginning. If you look at the end of the game where everybody was compared to the start of the game, right? You've got Campos comes in, which moves Hollingshead to the right. You've got Bogusz now playing in the midfield. You've got Kai Kamara there, right? Kike Oliveira stays on till the 85th minute for some reason, or Daz comes in and he's completely ineffective. But you've also got all these guys who have moved around the field so much as if it is FIFA. And we can just say, well, Hollingshead can play on both sides. So even though he's spent 65 minutes breaking down this left side, we're just going to switch him, right? And at the same time, we're going to move Belonga to the right side and Kike to the left, where neither have been effective all year, because maybe that works, right? It's like that line in The Phantom Menace that everybody loves to make fun of. Well, there's lots of them that people love to make fun of, right? Where Anakin says, like, let's try spinning. That's a good trick. That's what it feels like sometimes. Like, let's just switch the wingers. That works sometimes. Let's just pull Bogusz back into the midfield and throw a striker on and see if that works. As incisive as the subs were in years past for Steve, and maybe it really is just about the quality of player that he was subbing in, they are at, like, as good as they were, they're that bad now. They are, I mean, completely ineffective when we make changes now.
But I do wonder, is there an underlying philosophy beyond the transition game that we can really speak to? Right. I think this is where some of the issue is. It's like following the initial, you know, like I said, their initial attempt at transition, is there something else that they are capable or have game plan to be able to do, or is within their philosophy? Because I think we've seen a shift in how they go about it. And then, you know, so then I wonder, it's like, is he basically just like a Mike D'Antoni, right? Where, like, you know, in the NBA, where it's like, once what you want to do doesn't work, do you have something else on the bag, right? Like, are you just a one trick pony? And
I think they don't. I mean, they really don't, because, I mean, you see it as soon as a team gives LAFC the ball, it's over, right? Or like Columbus, if you're just good in possession and they can't win the ball from you in dangerous spots, then there's nothing, right? What did we see work against Galaxy? Pack it in, force them to, like, just play a bit cynical, right? Play a Christmas tree and force Ricky Pouche to break you down and try and find Paintsill and Peck, and he couldn't. And they turned over the ball a bunch as a result, and they were able to get those two goals and weather the storm. But I think that's all they are at this point. And I mean, look at the profiles of attackers, right? You have Kike Oliveira and Danny Bowanga, and that's it. And they're both counterattacking guys, and Kike isn't even good at it. So again, if it's not coming from Denny, then you're not coming from, you're not getting anything really. Again, this game, you got a little something from Tillman to Bogus, right? And then Bogus on the free kick, which I hope he continues to take free kicks because he's always been good from that spot. We haven't had somebody scoring free kicks for a while.
Yeah, well, but I think, like I said, that kind of speaks to, you know, like I said, this larger problem of, you know, like I said, the roster build and some of these different things. Because again, I think if there's nothing there, or if there's not much to look at from a tactical perspective, I do wonder now if we have the juice, or are they waiting to pull the trigger, or was it just about this MLS roster roll thing, which again is a whole nother discussion that I'm sure you and I could speak a ton of time on, that they're going to change the financial rules midseason. You know, but it's like one of these things where when you really look at it, it's like, is this team success dependent on putting the best talent on the field, and do we have the juice to do it this year given your cap circumstances? Again, which if we're honest and that's the case, cool, right? We're going to be good every 3 to 4 years, and you're going to put together a winner. But then I'm not entirely sure that that's acceptable to the larger fan base.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly not what you've sold everybody on, that like you're always going to be this juggernaut. Having said that, they've been to the past two MLS Cups, so hard to argue against that, right? But I don't know, Josh. I find myself more and more skeptical of what they're going to be able to do, even with big names involved.
Yeah, I mean, do we have to operate in windows in the way that every other American, I mean, I guess outside of baseball, right, that NFL, right, NBA teams work with, right, where you're basically working with about a 4 or 5 year window as it pertains, because of contract situations, that you can really do something, and then you have to suffer before the next window opens again. Right.
Right.
And
right.
And again, our window, our first window culminated with a cup in 2022. And I do wonder if we're in a transitionary period where they'll either be middle of the pack until the money situation makes more sense again or changes. I think the tough thing is like with the NBA and the NFL, the money changes are expected.
Yeah.
Right? They're expected, and they're usually done in like 10-year increments. But because of the lack of power from the MLS Players Association, and then the constant changes because of the Apple TV sponsorship and Messi and all these different things, like, you know, you're in a weird time where like anything can happen. So again, this league drives me crazy in more ways than one.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, the league is always going to be this way, and it's why you and I have held the position on the league that we have since we started this whole thing, and the reason we weren't involved with MLS before LAFC, right? I think it just becomes harder and harder to like maintain any sort of allegiance to a league product. The more you see like the salary cap, like the more you see them shoot themselves in the foot over trying to keep things in parity, the more it's like, I don't know why I care, you know? So I don't know, but I mean, to bring it all back to LAFC, like a really strong win against the Galaxy, against a good Galaxy team, who have looked kind of unstoppable, and you squashed them. Like you kept them from doing anything during that match. People are going to complain about the penalty, whatever. Like does Denny drag his foot and kind of create that contact? Sure. Are you giving up a reckless challenge in the box and making contact? Yeah, you are. So like, that's a penalty. Like this is one of my mantras on the sideline. Whenever I'm like, The rule about direct kick offenses is careless, reckless, or use of excessive force. It has nothing to do with intent or got the ball first or any of that. It doesn't have anything to do with it. It's careless, reckless, or excessive force. And that's a judgment call. And does he come in carelessly? Sure, he does. And then he takes advantage of it. Would I be mad about it going the other way? Probably. But like that's football, right?
I mean, how often in basketball do we complain about charging versus blocking foul calls?
Yeah.
It's almost the exact same thing, right? In terms of like it's one of these things where do you penalize you can only weed out the flopping so much.
Yeah.
Before it just becomes a purely judgment call on the side of the referee. Right. And at that point, unless you're going to, and it's also one of the things that I don't think you can automate either. Right. It's not like an offside call. It's not one of these different things where you can have a specific technology that isolates. Is it exactly this or that? It's not. Right. And so you just kind of have to live with it and you move on. Right. Cause like I said, we've seen worse not called and, you know, and on the other way around as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, regarding that game, again, strong win against the Galaxy, the Portland match. I don't know that there's a whole lot else to get to. I do think, again, the subs all ineffective. They don't look like they know what to do with Kai. Kai looks like a guy who hasn't played seriously in a while. Omar Campos was, I guess, fine, but again, no help in the attack, which is supposed to be his like main thing, right? Nathan Ordaz looks like he plateaued in a big way this past off season, which is probably why we haven't seen much of him. That was tough. That was tough for me to kind of watch and accept. It was like, oh man, and maybe it's just game state. That's fine too. I certainly hope he gets back on the horse and starts being more effective. I don't really... Josh, what do you make of all the... They had 6 yellow cards, and I think that's now a suspension for Atuesta in the next match. So what do you make of all these yellow cards? It does seem like they are picking up a lot of chippy yellow cards.
I mean, I kind of like it in the sense that like... You know, we've been soft for a while. Like, I hate stupid yellow. Like, the David Martinez kick the ball. Don't like that. That's just dumb. But if you're going to tell me that you're going to come in, you know, you're going to make the game more chippy because it makes the game uglier, which fits into your game model, then so be it. Right? Like, technically, right, if you really want to think about it, right, like, I would rather have them do that and stop the flow of the game. Because usually when we're in transition, we tend to do this stupid thing where we, you know, go 1-on-4 and then don't finish the play and then allow the team to come back at you full force. Now, if you're going to tell me the counter to it is we pick up a ton of yellows because now we're getting way more physical after the fact and we're finishing things and you're doing those things, I'm not mad about it, but I think it's just about, I do think that it's a, when you look at the players, like, Atuesta has brought in a different attitude since he's came back into the team.
Yeah.
And I think that midfield is a lot more gritty. You know, while they're not ball winners, right? They're also not afraid to get stuck in some of these things. So, you know, again, there's parts of it that you like and parts of it that you're just like, you know, that just be smart about it. And don't be David Martinez. In that moment, a second yellow for kicking the ball.
Yeah, I don't really mind it. The suspensions are certainly annoying, given how like actually threadbare this roster is. So losing David Martinez for a match and then he got injured, and then losing Atuesta for a match is not ideal. And the more that they keep piling on, the more it's like, all right, well, we're gonna serve a lot more suspensions this year. With a thin roster. So it's just one of those things. Like I do kind of wonder about the mentality and the psyche of this team. Like, is this frustration? Is this, is this part of the plan? Like, hey, we're going to take a bunch of cynical fouls and go get carded. That's fine. Just questions at this point, really. Again, we're still early in the season.
60% so. Cynicism, 40% in the other direction.
Okay. The last thing, if you look at a position map of the players, you just notice that it's kind of haphazard, right? You're really playing with two forwards, and they're playing pretty central in Bawanga and Oliveira. And maybe based on a position map is the wrong way to evaluate those two, since they keep switching and they're playing. So that's going to, like, if Bawanga spends 30 minutes on the right wing, obviously his overall position is going to be more central than it would have been. But you also see like Tillman and Bogush and Hollingshead all kind of occupy the same space. And I almost wonder if they should go to more of a relationist game in the way that they set up. And this is like the new South American craze, right? Fluminense is doing it. A handful of other teams in South America are doing it, where it's kind of like anti-positional play. It still uses a lot of the same principles of attack, because those are universal. So like things like the third man, things like what they call escadinhas, right? Which is like a ladder, right? Where they have three guys running all kind of at the same point, and they pass the ball from one to the next. And it kind of makes me wonder if they are going to have kind of this free flowing, formless attack, maybe they should pick up some more stuff like that. And we should just see more. One of the big things with that is a simple give and go, right? It's wherever there's space, you move to take it. And I think that seems to be in line with what Steve is trying to do in the counterattack. Is like, you have to counterattack as you see fit. Let's let it rip. But like, give them a couple more tools, like to help make them a little bit more effective in the attack. Which is confusing too, because like just last week he was talking about, or 2 weeks ago, he was talking about how they prefer the cutback over anything, which is like very Man City positional play, right? You have to really try hard to get the ball to that zone to cut it back at the right angle. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that conundrum of something like dynamic stability.
Right? Yeah.
Right. And right now, I think they're struggling to just be stable within the formation and trying to maintain their defensive shape. That I feel like they just don't have a lot left when it comes to the other side, right? Because if your back line has been playing as poorly as it is, and you don't have a chief organizer and a Chiellini that was going to keep everything together and keep you stable, it makes it really hard to be more dynamic on the other side of the ball, because I think now you're worried about getting caught out of position and not having guys ready to get back into the proper defense positions should things break down. And it has been breaking down because you have a bunch of guys playing out of position. So I think you're right, and I think that's probably what the intent is. I think the issue comes down to, you know, like it has been for the majority of the season, has been the threadbare nature of the roster that just doesn't allow you to do that. Like I said, if you're going to tell me that you had Chiellini back there, right, and this is now where maybe Boang, you know, like, it's as much as we may have thought that Boanga's like step back is because of the absence of Carlos Vela. Sometimes it's a matter of not having a stingy defense, right? So now you're going to have to play back away further, because the one thing that I've noticed is like, and what's the one thing that they've been crediting Kike for over and over again is his defensive work.
Yep.
And if you look at Boanga, he's not slouching on defense, right? He's coming back, he's getting stuck in. But now when you're having to withdraw them so deep defensively to help support a back line that was a lot more stable under Chiellini,
yeah, it
puts you in a bad, I mean, you just have to do a lot. You're going to have to do a lot more on the other side of the ball. And I think after a while, you have nothing left. And then I think the Colorado game is probably the example, right? Where you just have nothing left in the tank at altitude. Yeah. Because you're going to have to drop so much deeper and do these different things that you normally wouldn't have to if you were more stable at the back.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely, I think you and I were texting about that during the Portland match, is like, this defense is, like, this back line is in shambles, and we're giving up these ridiculous goals. And like, but we keep hearing the justification for somebody like Kike starting is, oh, his defensive presence is just irreplaceable, right? He's so good defensively. And it's like, okay, well, you got to marry that with a back line that can hold up its end of the bargain too. Like, if you're going to press from the front, these guys have to be better and better organized and a little bit stingier for when teams do break through that press. So I don't know.
And obviously, as much as we would have loved to have seen Kike sacrificed a lot earlier on, can you not afford to do that because of that back line? Because you need a little extra pressure, because you need him to chase, to come back a lot more, and then you're just continued to be hamstrung by what you got.
Whereas, I mean, I think we're a chicken of the egg situation there.
If you let's go back to even before Chiellini fully arrived, like in the cup season, right? They felt a lot more stable, even if it's Ibiaka back there, right?
Yeah, like, no, of course, yeah,
right, and I think it's a sum of the parts, right? You had guys that played a role and did it well and did those different things, and I think when you have that combination of Long and Murillo, it's just redundant, right?
Yeah,
like they kind of do a lot of the same things, and then they don't do enough of other things well enough to offset the negatives. So I do hope that Chanel becomes, you know, I'm hoping he's the answer there. It's unfortunate that you had to wait to get him off the scrap heap to be able to do it. But if he's able to step in and be that now general that he was at NYCFC, you know, and a cup winning team at that, you know, maybe you're in a better place because you have a guy that can organize it, and then you have a rotation behind it that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think if nothing else, it shows you how important Chiqui Palacios was to providing stability by not getting sucked out of position, by not getting beat down the wing, and by not, like, once your fullback is beat, now your center backs are going to be in a bad spot because they have to start shifting to cover. So,
and because of the way that our offense has been playing, right? Hollingshead has had to push up way further up than he normally would too, right? So then you're just Palencia has done a decent enough job on the right hand side to be a little bit more stable. But again, I think it's a lot different than, you know, I do think that, like you're saying, Cheeky did a lot more things that were underappreciated from a defensive standpoint, that we're now seeing more apparent in absence of Chiellini in the back line.
Yeah. Man. So LAFC sits sixth in the West. There's a three-way tie on points. LAFC, Minnesota, and St. Louis. Minnesota, by the way, played LAFC off the pitch. I mean, played them off of it, right? 2-0. Colorado's 1 point ahead of them. Beat LAFC rather handily. RSL, 1 point ahead as well. Beat them handily. So it's hard for me to look at this table and be like, oh yeah, LAFC are fine, right? Now, ultimately, are they? Yes, because MLS is ridiculous and 9 of 14 teams are going to make the playoffs. So they're probably going to be fine. San Jose is a dumpster fire. Dallas is a dumpster fire. Seattle's a dumpster fire. Austin is as well. So really, one team that is halfway decent is going to miss the playoffs in the West.
Well, and the thing is, and you also know that half of the teams that are in the playoffs as per current aren't going to spend in the way that LAFC are going to. So you expect some drop off there as well. Right? Because when LAFC make their moves, some of these teams are going to be stagnant because they just don't have the financial flexibility to do anything there too. So again, as much as it's annoying, sixth place is not a bad place to be given how bad we've played. And you would assume that the likelihood is that they're probably going to finish in the top five if all goes to plan.
I guess that's just maybe this is the model, right? It's what Seattle did for years as well, where it's like the beginning of the season is going to be bad, and we'll figure it out in the summer and peak at the right time. You just have to endure a lot of bad soccer, and I don't watch the sport to watch bad soccer. Like, I just don't, I don't, right?
I mean, I guess that's the difference between a Tarantula team and a Bob Bradley team, right? Like, Bob in, you know, in for all of his faults, you know, attempted, you know, generally wanted a good-looking brand of soccer.
He's far more ambitious, yeah.
Yeah, whether it was good for the team or not, right? I think we were crying for some pragmatism. And then now when you get the flip side and it's almost overly too pragmatic, it's hard to watch at times because it's just like, it's just not enjoyable, you know, because like I said, even when we were at the game, you know, like my kid is usually like engaged the entire time, and is that time around, it just felt different because he didn't feel like they were ambitious at all with what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, it's probably enough of that. Should we get to some questions here?
Let's do it.
Okay. Tom Camilleri first. LAFC looked a gift horse in the mouth, and the horse contemplated whether the glue factory was a better alternative. Is Bowanga just cold, or is he pressing because he has no faith in the players up front with him?
Both.
Man, go ahead.
I honestly, it's like, I think where, like you were saying earlier, it's kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah.
I really am not sure. If, like I said, I think part of it is, I think I don't think he came in fully engaged at, you know, because there was that contract situation, everything that started. And I think that led him to come in not on point. And then when you don't have an infrastructure around him that allows him to succeed in the way that we would have previously, where your infrastructure was extremely strong because you were a veteran laden team and all these different things. You had guys like Kellen Acosta that could clean up the mistakes and so on and so forth. I think it puts you in a different, I think that's why you end up with the Bowanga that you're currently seeing. You know, it's a multitude of things.
Yeah, I think the way that teams defend him is going to be the way that teams continue to defend him, which is to double team him constantly. This is nothing new on this show. We've talked about it for a year and a half now with him. And I think what you're seeing is him, he is pressing a bit. And he at the moment, he doesn't ever come against a 1v2 that he doesn't think he can win. A lot of people will say, yeah, you want your superstars to bet on themselves. And I'm saying, no, you don't. Not anymore. Like, that's over. A specific criticism for Bowanga here. When he comes against a 1v2, somebody will always take away the end line, right? They'll get in front of him. And then the other one will just come in on the side where he wants to cut in. And they won't even attempt to make a tackle. He is going to try and split those two defenders every single time. He's going to try and nutmeg one, jump over their legs in the middle, or, you know, kind of flick the ball up through the two of them, which is a fine way to beat them. But teams know how to defend him at this point. So if he's not on the break, he's just not going to be super effective. And that's where you need to have the rest of the team pivot off of him. If they're doubling Bowanga and they got a goalkeeper in the goal, you have at least a 1 or 2 man advantage somewhere, and you have to find it. You have to keep the ball moving and find it.
And to be fair, Tillman has found opportunities, right?
Yes. Like,
I think he's the one that's kind of thrived, you know, in due to the way that teams are playing Bowanga, because he, and, you know, like, fortunately for LAFC, he's found those spaces and found those opportunities to be effective. Because I think had it not been for him, we'd be in a much darker place right now.
I've seen Tillman taking some hate online, and I'm here to tell everybody that is so misguided. I don't know what you're seeing that makes you think that Tillman isn't effective. We're talking about a guy who, sure, are they kind of cleanup duty goals on mostly corner kicks? Yep. But until maybe Bogush has 4 goals now. Like, coming into this week, Tillman was your goal leader, tied with Bowanga, who had scored 2 penalties. And he's getting assists like the one that he got. I mean, the one that he had to Bogush on Saturday was beautiful. Just a beautiful, beautiful ball. So I don't know where this Tillman hate comes from, because it's completely unjustified.
It's because he dissed the Mexican teams, you know?
I'm
convinced. But no, I mean, I think when you really, I mean, he didn't do any, I mean, not, I think, I don't think he did himself any favors by going about it in that way. Right. And then he kind of fell, his production fell off last year. So I think there's definitely going to be, you know, I think we, there's a watchful eye on him, and probably we're going to be more cynical, you know, than we probably would had he been in, you know, than you would with another guy, maybe even Bogusz, right? Like, but I think it's just one of these situations now where, you know, like I said, he's, when you really take a step back and look at it, he's, again, he's definitely been the one person that has taken advantage of what's given, and a team that doesn't seem to want to do that all that often for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next one's from Alan Kine. We have no attack. I mean, not even with an advantage. So basically, unless Denis is going out of his mind or someone nets a marginally repeated goal, we're done, right? Oh, and isn't the trade-off supposed to be good defense? Backline and goalkeeper were awful in the first half. I mean, they gave up two pretty bad goals.
Yeah. I mean, see the previous 45 minutes of this podcast for our answer to that. Yeah. I mean, I think, like I said, I think this team is keeping it together, but just barely.
Yeah.
At this point. Yeah.
Darmalia, I used to wonder why Ordaz has not come in more often as a sub. I can see why now. What's happened to Tomas Angel? LAFC looks stale and predictable in the attack, not creative. Yeah, I mean, it's the same, right? You know, we've been watching it for 8 games now, right? And everybody's kind of coming to this conclusion, like, this team cannot attack at all. They just can't do it. Not in any repeatable kind of way. I'm bummed out that this is the Nathan Ordaz that we're seeing right now. I think it makes, like, man, I wish he was in a better spot, because he came in with an opportunity to show something. And I just, we probably have too high of expectations on this kid at 19. Right. I thought it was weird that they brought him in and put him on the right wing. It's just ineffective, man. I wish he could just get through whatever plateau he's going on right now.
I mean, do you think it's a matter of him, of the system, and, like I said, the lack of infrastructure, that his development has stagnated a bit?
I don't know. I really don't know. I just haven't seen enough of him, right? I think last year watching him, I was always, like, impressed with his athleticism still. And that was not effective at all against Portland. Now, granted, they were sat in, right? And so, like, you're not going to run by somebody if it's not on the counter. So I think that's what discourages me more, is the fact that it's somebody set in and he doesn't know what to do. Right, if he's not running in behind, then he doesn't know what to do.
But isn't that basically the same thing of, like, all of our attackers right now? If you're not running in behind, or if you're not on the break, there's not a whole lot of, you know, there's not much creativity there.
Yeah, it's a major problem. He also asks what's happened to Tomas Angel. He must not be good. I mean, to not see him when the attack is this dire. Yeah, I mean, we got, like, a 5-minute cameo in Snowmageddon in Salt Lake, right? And that was it. Other than that, we haven't seen him.
He got hurt at some point. So, again,
what's that?
I think he got hurt after that Snow
game. I think he did, yeah.
So, I guess, I do wonder if injuries have something to do with it, but also, you know, I think we probably placed higher hopes on him because he was one of the few signings that we actually had.
Yeah.
And we were, given that we were begging for more reinforcements in the attack. So I think maybe there was just more pressure placed on him where it probably didn't need to be, given the circumstances.
I think signing Kai Kamara is probably the death knell there, right? Where it's like, all right, we're going to go get this 38-year-old forward to hold us over till we get the 37-year-old forward from France. Oh, man. All right, Jesse, the good thing is that if we place eighth, we'll host the playing game. Truthfully, though, we need some summer signings. Wouldn't mind a DP center back and going the four U22 players route. They're going to have to sign somebody. I'm skeptical of their U22 signings because they are so hit or miss on young DPs and all these guys.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out how they're going to navigate the new roster rules. And again, whether or not, because also they haven't been fully adopted yet the Players Association, right? So the Players Association.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be summer.
Yeah, it still has to buy in. You have to get agreement there. So this is why I think it's so hard to really make, it's hard to be overly positive at this point, because again, there's just so much in the air that's required to get us to the point where LAFC can really have a, like, if you're going to tell me these are the roster rules that are going to be set, then we can say, okay, this is the splash that this team's likely going to make, given that we don't even know what that's going to be. Giroud is your only hope at this point.
Yeah. Did you see that there was talk about creating an icon rule? Bogart tweeted this out.
I mean, would it be like a whack version of the franchise tag? I mean, the MLS want to be the XFL.
Yeah. And I guess a GM said, well, why don't we just call it like the Carlos Vela rule? Because it's clearly what it is, right? Going back to my earlier point about sometimes it's really hard to care about the league at all or any team in it. Like, the fact that we're here, like, can you please just let teams sign who they want? Please. Like, yep. Why? Why are we doing this? Why are you making franchises beg to sign quote-unquote icon players? Like, it's just so tedious and dumb.
This is why it's an easy choice to have Masubi and Shave Ice over trying to figure out what the heck happened with the roster situation.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Next one is Bobby Digital. I'm not panicking yet. Long seasons like this, you can't get too high or low. Martinez will start soon, and once the summer window closes, we can rehash this. I think this is an argument for a flat table, Josh. Because you're right. If you come in seventh and you're in the playoffs and you're playing good soccer by then, you'll be all right.
Yeah.
But again, you got to endure a lot of bad soccer before then.
That's the thing. You know, like I said, I think as fans, what do we value the most? Right. Sometimes I wonder why I ultimately am happy that my team won the championship. Right. And it's great. We won a cup. There's an elation that comes with it. But I do wonder if I would be better served valuing better soccer all the time versus just my team playing terrible soccer and then winning the cup at the end. You know, like,
yeah.
I think it's like not for myself, like as, you know, with the NFL, I don't really have like a team that I follow. So my favorite thing in the world is what is that DirecTV thing before the Red Zone channel?
The Red Zone, right? Yeah.
Because I just get to see the best of every game all the time. And then that's basically what I get to watch. Right. And so and college football and European soccer has its appeal there because, again, every game matters and these different things, right, to a certain degree. So that's why now, like I said, it's when you compare that, I do start to wonder at times which one in the long run I should actually value more, right? Is my team winning a cup or just better quality product? Because as a fan, I still have to pay for I got to pay my $100 or whatever the heck it is for my MLS season pass, right? So.
Yeah.
I would hope the product would be great all the time, but it clearly is not going to be. And I don't know in the current iteration of the MLS rules if it'll ever be, right? Are we just, are we just have to swallow the fact that the beginning of the season is nonsense unless you're in CCL?
Yeah, I think waiting for MLS to change to a more digestible format is a fool's errand. Next one, Hector Gonzalez. Maybe we need to change up the starting lineup. Our starters have become too comfortable. I would love to. I would love to put some pressure on these guys. But the only place you have any depth at all is the midfield. And even there, it's not all that deep, right? Especially if Bogus is the starting striker. So I think you definitely have to turn up the heat on some of these guys, right? Another argument for deeper, more robust rosters. But last one is from Trevor, who just tweets a gif of Olivier Giroud. Please, Olivier, save us from what we are watching.
Yeah, it's about as much. I mean, this is easily the most cynical podcast we've ever recorded.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because it's 2 a.m. in the morning here in the Philippines and I had meetings this morning beforehand or what, but you know, like I said, it's a tough time, but you know, hopefully it'll be a reverse of last season where it was the opposite, where we looked great at the beginning and was terrible at the end.
Yep. So LAFC have Red Bulls, who, as far as I understand it, are playing pretty well this year. Not quite the same that we're used to, where it's just ridiculous pressing all the time. Yeah, tied for first in the East. And is that match away as well, or is that at home? That match is... Why can't I find it here? Man. I think it's at
home. That is home.
Yeah, it's home. So at least there's that. That's this Saturday. So LAFC have been much better at home historically. So we will see what happens. You can follow the show at @counterpress_. You can follow me at Kirk Kinsey. Josh.
LAFC Josh on X.
All right. We will talk to you all then. Good night.